the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in. And joining us by phone is Sam Ricketts. He's a senior fellow for energy and environment at the Center for American Progress. And he's here to talk about an article, a column he helped pen with a few others, colleagues, entitled State Climate Leadership is Coming to the Nation's Capital in 2021. Sam, thanks so much for joining Nell and me on This Green Earth.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with the column. Give us a thumbnail sketch of what the column was all about.
Yeah. No, thank you. Well, some colleagues and I at the Center for American Progress, Sally Harden and Amy Barnes, published a piece this week about how state climate leadership is coming to Washington, D.C. in 2021. Very quickly, it is basically looks at the election, and particularly the election of President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, and how they ran on a mandate and now have a mandate for bold climate action, for building the clean energy economy with federal policy in Washington, D.C., how their campaign emphasized it in their policy agenda, in their closing message, running television ads on it in key swing states like Michigan and Arizona, and how they're going to take office with this wind at their back. But not only that, they're going to be joined by leaders who were elected in states where we've already seen progress. We have a theory that so much of what needs to get done in Washington, D.C. can learn the lessons from state and local climate progress that's really gone going throughout the country. And now you're going to have elected leaders who are coming to town from Arizona, from Colorado, from Virginia, states where there is ongoing and very recent real transformative progress towards building a 100% clean energy economy. And those leaders who are coming to town will bring those lessons and those coalitions at their back so that federal policy can start moving forward again on climate policy and not decidedly backwards as it has done during the Trump years.
Looking at those, you know, people that have been elected in the states has me wondering, you know, is climate change as divisive among the country's populace, you know, voters and citizens, as it is amongst our legislators, our elected officials?
No, this is a great question, because I think the answer is no. I mean, if you look at it, certainly, Biden and Harris are taking office with this bold mandate for climate action. The outgoing president has led his party, and certainly Republicans in Congress have followed suit in sort of denying the science of climate change and opposing clean energy solutions. But if you look at the voting public. You look at the American public, clean energy and climate solutions are overwhelmingly popular. People understand this is in fact a crisis, but it's also an enormous economic opportunity. And you've got majorities of both parties. I think Fox News showed a poll a couple of days after the election showing that, you know, 70 or 80% of their viewers, mostly conservative audience, of course, support climate change, are worried about it and want to invest in renewable energy. To make it even more precise, you know, in the state of Utah, you've got 23 or so, maybe more now, but 23 as of last year, communities who have committed to 100% clean energy, like Salt Lake City, like Park City. Mm-hmm. You've got a state legislature that overwhelmingly passed the Community Renewable Energy Act that will empower those communities to be able to meet those goals. You know, you've got ongoing progress that's happening at the state and local level. Not all of it is always it's not always being transmitted or listened to by federal elected leaders in Washington, D.C., which, you know, unfortunately, actually also includes members of the Utah congressional delegation.
Right. And just to supplement that, here in the state, roughly 7,000 people are employed in the solar industry, we'll call it, while approximately 2,000 people are employed in the coal industry, and those numbers are diverging with each year. However, to throw a bit of wet snow on this, the Utah Public Service Commission just a couple weeks ago lowered the export rate for solar, for individual solar providers, from 9.2 cents per kilowatt hour to 5.8 cents per kilowatt hour. That's on average. It's a blended number. Now, Rocky Mountain Power asked, originally, remember, now we had, we talked about, they asked for something, 1.5 cent per kilowatt hour export rate from 9 cents. So 5.8 cents is somewhat, well, you know, split the difference there. But that is just with respect to solar here and just with respect to Utah. Those are some of the ongoing challenges to maintain that renewable energy policy and enthusiasm.
Totally. I mean, it's a really good point, and it really emphasizes that, look, not everyone's going forward. We shouldn't say that every state or every community is moving forward. They're not. Some are going backwards, unfortunately. I mean, fortunately, you do have most of the West now driving forward just recently, and I think Arizona's community corporation is going to effectuate this rule this month about requiring all carbon-free electricity in the state by mid-century. Arizona will join Nevada, which passed 100% clean electricity targets. It'll join Colorado. It'll join Washington, California, Oregon. The West in particular is really moving ahead. It sees this economic future. And of course, you've got some of the best performing states' economies in this bunch as well. But like the point you reference is a really important argument for federal policy action. And that's why it was so critical for Biden and Harris to be elected. And not only that, it's so critical now that they have been elected for them to go and implement the plan that they ran on and then won on with voters at their back.
So give us some more specifics of some of the profiles we've seen in some of our neighboring states out here. One of the states you highlight is New Mexico.
Indeed, New Mexico, shortly after the 2018 election, so in 2019, after a new governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, took office, passed the, I believe it's the Energy Transformation Act in their state to require 100% clean electricity in the state by, I believe, 2045, with really strong progress continuing to drive a really burgeoning solar industry, also with provisions that will help and assist coal communities as they transition. As you all know, coal as an industry and coal power plants and mining have been under enormous economic pressure as consumers and utilities switch to cleaner options that are in fact cheaper and don't come with the toxic and the carbon air pollution. And those communities are already experiencing economic transition. So the New Mexico law helps to facilitate support for those communities to make sure that we're bringing everyone together into this clean 100% clean energy future. But really, transformational progress that was necessitated by the election of a new governor and a new state legislature in 2018. Michelle Lujan Grisham, in that campaign, famously ran an ad where she climbed to the top of a wind turbine and talked about how we're building a clean energy future for New Mexico. That was a courageous thing to do. Those things are tall, but it's the type of leadership we've seen take root in states in the last 5 years. In particular, you've got 15 states and territories who've taken some form of legislative or executive action to get to 100% clean energy future. That leadership we're seeing all the more of following 2018, and now as per our column, we're going to see some of that leadership come to Washington, D.C.
We're speaking with Sam Ricketts. He's a senior fellow for energy and environment at the Center for American Progress, and we're talking about a column he helped pen, which is on the Center for American Progress website. The column is titled, State Climate Leadership is Coming to the Nation's Capital in 2021, and I'll add, and beyond. For the next 4 years. And I want to identify specific, at least senators. You talked about the states, but there's Senator Mark Kelly, who, although I'm not sure the election of him is confirmed in Arizona, but it looks like he will be confirmed as the senator from one of the two senators from Arizona. There's John Hickenlooper from Colorado, who has experience in renewable energy policies and programs. Gary Peters, senator from Michigan. Tina Smith, a senator from Minnesota. Ben Ray Lujan, the Senate-elect from New Mexico, as we were just talking about, and Mark Warner, Senator from Virginia. All of these folks are identified in your column as having experience in renewable energy, clean energy policies and programs. Are there others that you want to identify, and Congress people too?
Yeah, indeed. There's a swath of new leaders who are coming to town to help Biden and Harris drive this clean energy vision forward. The senator I'd love to take a moment to identify, however, though, is not new or newly elected, but is instead a sitting senator from the state of Utah and Senator Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. I want to just speak to this for a moment, because Mr. Romney appeared on one of the Sunday shows over the weekend and basically said, hey, we're not going to go forward in trying to build this clean energy future. I think he used particularly, we want to make sure we're keeping with oil and gas and coal. And I was, really barely disappointed to hear mm-hmm. the senator say that. I think advocates for climate solutions, across all parties, have sort of hoped and expected that they might be able to find a willing partner in driving forward clean energy solutions to Mr. Romney. And it is, and now that the country has so forcefully embraced Mr. Biden and Ms. Harris, their agenda, I just saw the vote count now that Joe Biden, the Biden-Harris ticket is now got a higher percentage than Ronald Reagan won with in 1980, the highest percentage of a challenger against the incumbent president since FDR in 1932. This is a resounding victory throughout the country. So anyways, what I mean to say is, it is disappointing to see Mitt Romney sort of already foreclosing the opportunity to work together on solutions to continue to build the clean energy economy. I hope his tune will change, but that doesn't sound like the kind of constructive, forward-looking leadership we're going to need from states if we're going to see this economy recover, and if we're going to see this economy recover with investment in things that are going to continue to drive the economy in the 21st century, not, hug the 19th century energy technologies that we once relied upon, but maybe don't need to anymore. I hope his tune will change.
Agreed, but running along that same line, what Republican senators do you see perhaps supporting renewable energy policies and programs? Because, let's face it, there's a good chance that the Senate may still be held by Republicans. We're going to need a few to push through any legislation.
Indeed. Three different things on this front. Number one, Biden and Harris do not have to wait for Congress. There is a suite of existing authorities in the executive branch, as well as the dollars that the federal government holds in procurement and in existing finance authorities that they can get to work with on day one. And I'm looking forward to seeing them do so with the ambition and the vision that they've been running on. Number two, you're right in that, Congress has a role to play in this too, particularly in investing in an economic recovery. We're going to need Congress to step up and do the things that sort of Trump and McConnell haven't compelled them to do yet, which is reinvest in an economy that's really hurting. People are struggling to pay bills. People are out of work. This pandemic has bequeathed to us a economy that's in real trouble. And Congress is going to need to step up to the plate because it controls the federal power of the purse. And in that, we should absolutely be having a conversation about investing in sustainable economic recovery, sustainable infrastructure, clean energy solutions, conservation, greater innovation, manufacturing, all of which can be climate solutions. And on that front, I certainly hope that Mr. Romney will find it in his heart to work together on solutions and not follow Mitch McConnell on the path of obstruction. I hope other senators like Lisa Murkowski from Alaska and others are going to be willing to step up to the plate here and work together and not follow Mitch McConnell on another potential path of obstruction I fear he's laying out for the country. But there's going to be an opportunity to do this, and there's an opportunity for people to show true leadership. And then the third thing I'll say is, it's going to be crucial, and I think it's going to be expected, for the Biden-Harris administration to work with state and local leaders around the country collaboratively in building this clean energy economy. Sort of, from the we talk about how all these state and local climate solutions are coming to D.C. That's true, and that's exciting, and we need it for the whole country. But the federal government's got to also partner with and support those actors who are making meaningful progress for communities, you know, right there at home in places around the country, from Utah to Washington State to Florida to Maine. You know, you've got this progress that's ongoing, building the clean energy economy, and now we'll have a partnership between states and locals and the federal government to make it happen collaboratively.
So you mentioned that there are some actions that, you know, the Biden-Harris administration can take pretty quickly. What are some of the things you expect them to prioritize?
Well, first things first, they've got to establish an administration. You know, the transition has been set up, and the first decisions that transition makes is personnel. Personnel is policy. Personnel and priorities for the initial days are the things the transition team's got to be working on, and they've got to be prioritizing people who have got knowledge and passion for confronting the climate crisis, just like the president-elect and vice-president-elect have. Second, they've got a suite of regulatory tools, some of which they've already sort of committed to using existing authorities to drive after, right? Whether that's repealing the 125 environmental rollbacks that Trump has effectuated, which includes sort of the Trump rule, I think it's called the Affordable Clean Energy Rule. It is misnamed for sure, but it is a rollback of Obama era clean power plan. So rules for the power sector. Certainly, Biden and Harris have committed to using existing authorities to drive towards transportation decarbonization and working with labor unions, environmentalists, auto manufacturers to really drive towards 100% zero emission and electrified vehicles. Placing limitations on methane pollution from industrial operations. That's another key one. That's one actually that can derive a lot of lessons from the states. Colorado was the first state to put such methane pollution limits on industrial operations. And then, you know, as I mentioned, using the power of federal procurement to ensure that federal government spends about $500 billion a year in all manner of procurement around infrastructure and buildings and the like, to make sure that you're using that, you know, considerable purchasing power to drive markets towards clean energy and away from the fossil fuel economy.
And rejoin the Paris Climate Accords.
Yeah,
that's probably the first one.
Yeah, that.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, well, I want to, again, supplement what we've been talking about, because the International Energy Agency just put out a report yesterday, and I'll just give a brief summary of it. It says consumption of electricity generated by wind, solar, and hydroelectric sources will grow, according to their report, nearly 7% in this year, in 2020, despite the fact that overall energy demand will slump by 5%, which is the steepest drop since World War II. Renewable electricity is growing because of government policies encouraging such investments and strong interest among investors. Investors who want to put money into clean energy projects. So they expect the world will add nearly 4% to its capacity in 2020 to generate electricity from renewables like wind and solar, despite travel restrictions, factory closures, and other obstacles, et cetera. So it, again, the trend on a global basis is up for renewables, and it's up because of business leaders recognize the value and the benefit of investing in renewable clean energy.
Thoughts? That's right. This is, I mean, I don't mean to cut you off.
No.
That's totally right. This is, you know, we've long talked about the clean energy is the future. No, the clean energy is now the present.
Yeah.
These changes are ongoing. You mentioned the disparity between renewable energy jobs in Utah, being, so, you know, 300-400% greater than coal industry jobs, with coal sinking faster by the day and clean energy growing by the day. You've got, you know, we've got millions of Americans, 3.5 million Americans prior to COVID working in these fast growing industries with some of the fastest growing occupations in the country. You've got business investment just continuing to flow into these industries. The entire global economy recognizes this shift is happening. And unfortunately, we have been in the United States laboring under a Trump administration that has shut its eyes to that reality, I think driven by fossil fuel campaign contributions and sort of an ideological stance against science. But we've got to move aggressively towards this clean energy future, or we're not going to be home to the burgeoning industries of the 21st century. Those are going to be instead jobs, technologies, industries that grow elsewhere. With economic competitors around the world. So we've got to get in the game. I know Biden and Harris are planning to have us do so. it's income, and they've got partners in the local, at the state and local level around the country. You know, many state and local leaders, including Utah, have been members of the We Are Still In Coalition, saying we're not getting out of that Paris Climate Agreement. We're gonna remain committed to what it stands for and the targets the U.S. embraced in it. You know, they've now got a partner in the federal government. The federal government is going to need, you know, the Biden-Harris administration is similarly going to need Congress to recognize this opportunity and step forward in it too.
And as an aside, I look forward to the word protection being reinserted back into the Environmental Protection Agency, because they play a critical role in, among other things, monitoring carbon dioxide and methane emissions programs, et cetera, which the Trump administration had kind of not necessarily canceled, but just defunded. Right, you can have great programs, but if there's no money to actually run the program, it does nothing. So the Environmental Protection Agency, and it's kind of getting its act back together again, will play a critical role in helping establish effective policies and programs.
Totally, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, as it will once again be called, rather than the, you know, Everybody Pollutes Anything Agency, that the Environmental Protection Agency really can be a key player, if not the key player, within the federal government's apparatus and really driving the rules that can take us to the clean energy future. And those rules are just going to have cascading and enormous economic benefit as we have an opportunity here to close the door on the fossil fuel economy of the past and build the 100% clean energy economy that America needs, and that is our future.
Sam Ricketts, he's a senior fellow for energy and environment at the Center for American Progress. He helped co-author an article on the Center for American Progress website, State Climate Leadership is Coming to the Nation's Capital in 2021. Sam, what's the website?
AmericanProgress.org. Perfect. You find it right there.
There you bet. There you go. Sam, thanks so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth. We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.